So I'd like to get our moderator's permission to offer an offering from one of my godbrothers who taped an offering for me. Yesterday, Shyam Sundar Das joined ISKCON in 1966. Yeah, can you play it there? A few months after I did, and he was here in Vrindavan for about a week. He regretted that he had to go back to his work. He wanted to stay another week. He couldn't get another airline reservation. So I asked him if he would speak something. So if you permit, this is a 9-minute offering. Shyama Sundar was Prabhupada's secretary for almost 2 years running. When he came here, he's been traveling a lot. He shaved his head and has decided to write his memoirs of Srila Prabhupada sometime within the next several months, and made a renewed commitment to serve Srila Prabhupada. So I think that this is quite an appropriate offering. I ask that you allow some of his comments about myself. I'm his old friend, so it's a little on the affectionate side, but don't take it to be very meaningful, please. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. All glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. This is your old, dirt-eating, worn-out, lost and prodigal servant, Shyama Sundar Das. Come to see you after these long 20 years. Struggling now with some powerful emotions, so abruptly have you yanked me in the darkest dark into this dazzling effulgence of your presence here in Vrindavan. Where are the words? How can such regret, such forgiveness be? How can so much gratitude? Where are the words for so much praise? Oh, I tried hard these 20 years to forget you, Srila Prabhupada, but you never let me forget, did you? Even in the deepest wilderness, you sent your stalwart servants, like Mukunda, my friend of 35 years, an angel to remind me. You sat, you stood, you walked across, you even flew into my tortured dreams as I lay in the wretched whorehouses of the world, mostly regal and indifferent, often scolding me, but sometimes smiling beautifully. Try to remember, Shyama Sundar. Remember, we sat so close together all those years ago. The master, the protector, the father, the teacher. You taught me with such expertise and patience, this son of ignorance. You touched me with much tenderness and whacked me with a stick. I massaged your golden body and picked you up like a baby when you were sick. We laughed together then, often uproariously, and cried, and danced, and stumbled, and schemed, and dreamed. We probed things relentlessly, and let them go just as easily. You took me on your great adventure, the unlimited adventure young men crave. The guide, the driver, engineer. Sometimes even you were the passenger while I or others drove. Prabhupada's magic carpet ride. Victory after victory, nothing could go wrong. And everything went wrong. Never mind, you'd say. It's Krishna's grace. And adversity would run away before us like a whipped dog. Hut! Go away. You are agitating Krishna's men. Through all the years I've been away, Srila Prabhupada, one thing stands out the most. Whenever anyone would ask me, why did you follow this man? Why is he so special? I would say, because it's true that never have I seen at close quarters and after years of careful scrutiny any other such perfect person anywhere. One who never made any mistake. One who knew everything about everything. And above all, one who was always in bliss, always content, always satisfied, and without exception. Naturally, they would then ask, "Then why do you not follow still?" And I would say, "That is to my great regret. Forgiveness, I can try. I am begging. Atonement, you call it. But I know you don't think much of this concept, atonement. Let us see some service, that's all. All right, perhaps one small iota of service, of benefit, can be rescued from the rotten course of my life by sharing with your real servants the hindsight, the memories of an aging man who once walked with the perfect master. Although my words are probably poisoned and should be immediately be banished from hearing, I would say to these fresh-faced angels, Krishna consciousness is a great adventure. As Krishna tells Arjuna, I am victory, I am adventure, vyavasiyaha. I am the strength of the strong, adventure. Prabhupada never hesitated to take any risk to spread his Krishna consciousness movement. And that's another thing, movement. Prabhupada is never idle. Movement is life. He wants this movement to be alive, thriving, to go always forward, sideways, up, down, in ever-increasing velocity and power, until Krishna's name resounds in every nook and cranny of the planet. That is his first instruction for us. Seeing all these great achievements of yours after 20 years, Prabhupada, so many wonderful, astounding achievements, only makes it all the more apparent that your movement has just begun. It's only 30 years old. So I would say to your devotees, move, move, increase, increase, take risk, adventure out, and get strength. You have just begun. Make as big as you possibly can this Krishna conscious movement. And when you can do no more, make sure the children take it up where you left off. I would remind them that for you, movement for Krishna develops love for Krishna. And as movement increases, the love increases, and overflows like a flood, never diminishing. That is your goal, to get a little love for Krishna. And another thing for my dear God brothers and God sisters, laughter, humor. Prabhupada's adventure should be fun, full of joyous moments of eternal, unstoppable laughter. Prabhupada once told me that the laughter urge arises from seeing the difference between what you expect and what really happens. The magic effect of surprise. Adventuring for Krishna is a constant surprise, amusing and relishable. I tried to remember, Prabhupada, the time I saw you laugh the most. And I think it was on a plane once over the Atlantic Ocean. It was night, and everyone else on the plane was asleep, and I awoke to see you intensely watching an old Charlie Chaplin film, City Lights. And you were laughing so hard tears rolled down your cheeks, and your full mouth of teeth gleamed in pure hilarity. That's all, Prabhupada. A little memory of you is all I have left. As a businessman, I am practically a failure. As a family man, I am a complete failure. So please accept a little service of remembering you and trying in the future to save as many of these precious pastimes of yours for posterity as possible, in a book, or any other way I may be able to do at the request of my godbrothers, who are so much more advanced, to help you spread your adventurous, hilarious, surprising movement into every corner of the world. Gratitude, praise, only the simple words are left, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you, thank you, thank you. all glories, all glories to your divine grace.
We'd like to give a very, very heartfelt thanks to Shyamasundara Prabhu for sharing some very, very sweet memories and experiences of Srila Prabhupada. So now I'd like to ask Mukunda Maharaj to please share his experiences and offer his homage at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada.
So last night, Dina Bandhu Prabhu asked me to recount some of my early or first meetings, first meeting with Srila Prabhupada. So I thought it would be appropriate. I suppose the message in this, there's probably many messages, but the most significant one is that Srila Prabhupada reached into the lowest realms, the lowest echelons of society to start his movement. Once we heard it quoted, he said that I practically had to walk through fire to start this movement. So it was in New York's Bowery, a place of degenerates, inebriates, drunkards, homeless, lost people, that this meeting took place. I was informed by a friend that he called him the old Swami, his lecturing in the Bowery. So I thought, maybe this is a genuine person. I'd been to some of the uptown so-called Swamis who sat in their followers in leather chairs, smoking pipes and speaking unintelligibly in sing-song, Hindiized English, and found it very disappointing. But since it was the Bowery, I thought maybe here's a genuine person. In the summertime, the Bowery in New York smells like a mixture of urine and beer, a little bit of wine mixed in. It really does. So I went to this address, and I, at that time, was living nearby there in a so-called artist-in-residence loft on an upper floor, also on the Bowery, on the same block, just a few doors away. So some drunken men were sitting out on the step. There was one step and a door. And I knocked on the door, and they were very rowdy. They were kind of threatening. They didn't really want to let me in. So I finally just sort of powered my way through, and all of a sudden I was in a dark hallway with no light anywhere. So I waited, and after some time I could hear the little ching, ching, ching of the kartals coming from up above. So I started to follow the sound, and there were four stories of stairs going in the same direction. And I just kind of felt my way up the wall, following the sound. At the top, a door was open, just a little chink with some light coming through. And all I knew was that there was a Swami in the Bowery. I didn't know anything else. And so I pushed open the door, and in this very modest room with no proper ceiling and cobwebs hanging from beam to beam and a bare light bulb hanging over Srila Prabhupada at one end of the room, I ventured slowly forward. He was chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and some people were sitting at his feet. He was on a raised dais about 2 by 3 meters and maybe 18 inches high. He was wearing a beige-colored turtleneck sweater. He had big glasses on. They were thick frames. We call them horn-rimmed in the United States. Red rims. And he sat very regally as he was chanting. He had a little African drum. He was playing like this on one side. And some of the followers were playing kartals, and they were chanting Hare Krishna. So I kind of walked forward slowly and sat down with the others and tried to intone the words. I'd sort of heard of Krishna and Rama, but I wasn't sure what they were saying. So we chanted together, and then Prabhupada began to lecture after about 15 minutes. And he spoke with a voice of great authority and a kind of pleading tone, almost strident. And the phrase that kept ringing in my ears, I am not this body, I am not this body, but in a very plaintive, I am not this body tone. So it remained etched in my mind the whole time, more than anything else. And some of the other words were a little difficult to understand because his English was very Indian at that time. And he had a big book, I suppose it was the Srimad Bhagavatam, full of Sanskrit, and he would be quoting, sometimes from the book, sometimes from memory, very long passages. So to me they were long, I didn't know what they meant. So he had the appearance of a scholar, a very distinguished personality. And the fact that he was there in that place made me think that he was sincere, that he didn't have a motive of trying to get a lot of money. It was very incongruous, actually, to see someone of that sophistication, intellectual and aristocratic, to be there in that place with some sort of an urgent mission. I couldn't really figure it out. So after the class ended, I was trying to study Eastern philosophy and all kinds of things. Taoism, Zen, Buddhism, Bhagavad Gita. So I had these kind of strange questions to ask. And so I asked Prabhupada, I said, if you were walking along the road and you saw a young man beating on an old man, would you interfere? What would be the spiritually correct thing to do? So to make a long story short, Prabhupada said that you can't know what to do unless you learn how to act on the spiritual platform. So I questioned him some more, he answered some more and reiterated what he said and elaborated in different ways, and I really couldn't comprehend what the spiritual platform was, but I finally just gave in, thinking that he knew more than I did and that I would come to understand it someday. So then he chanted again, and I had this distinct memory that he looked very much like my grandfather, my father's father. He had the same look, the same shape, the same head shape, the same smile, and the same affectionate bearing towards everyone who was sitting in that audience. So I felt that he would be approachable. And so after the last kirtan, went up to him and thought I would start a conversation. So I didn't know what he might say. I kind of thought he would be too busy to really talk with me, because I considered him to be a very exalted personality. So I didn't really know what I was going to say. But at that time, I was in the music business, in the music world, and I was getting interested in Indian music, and I had some Indian instruments. So I was standing, and he was sitting on his dais, looking up with a very childlike grin, like my grandfather. So I just heard myself saying to him, I have a tambura. Those are my first words to Srila Prabhupada. Not very profound, for sure. So without skipping a beat, he was looking up with this very innocent, smiling look, and he said, then bring it. So I was completely dumbstruck. I didn't know what to say. So I was thinking that this would be some sort of a philosophical conversation, but there was so much affection coming from Prabhupada that I just felt there was no need to discuss anything. There was no need to pursue any philosophical initiatives. he was inviting me to come and chant with him, just like some other fellow musician or brother or father or friend. So I was taken aback, and I just kind of nodded my head and said yes, and that was the end of the first meeting. When I came back with the tambura, I was at the door, and he was chanting, and he went like this to me. I didn't know what that meant. So I just stopped for a while, and I started to edge forward, and he just kept going like this. Finally, when I got right up to him, I finally worked out that it meant that I should sit down. Come here and sit down. Anyway, all the time I was playing that tambura and Prabhupada was chanting, I was trying to figure out which raga he was singing in, and tuning and changing the strings and the knobs, and every time I looked up at him, he was just chanting, completely oblivious to my existence. And I began to wonder, what is the use of this tambura anyway? Anyway, the immediate sense of affection that I felt from Prabhupada was what stayed with me throughout my whole life as a devotee. Never went away. And I suppose on occasions like this, we should say things about Prabhupada's departure. So I'll just close by saying, when Prabhupada used to say that my anxiety is this movement will go on after I leave, I never allowed myself to think about it, because I couldn't imagine life without Prabhupada being there. And when that fateful announcement was made in the Los Angeles temple, November 11th, 1977, I was completely grief-stricken. And I remember walking out of the temple, and the first thing that happened was someone asked me if I could help him start his car. And at that moment, I had a glimmer of a thought that life would have to go on without Srila Prabhupada, and I helped him start his car. And fortunately, through his affection, Prabhupada has empowered his followers to carry on his movement in his physical absence and preach to them that this is the most powerful way to realize the spiritual master. So, of course, it is my hope, maybe as much as all of yours, my fervent hope, that we will be able to please him and carry on in the way he would want us to. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Om Ajnanatimirandhasa.